This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
CBS Sports Radio. Sports Flash.
I'm Justin Shackle. Next up, it is the mailman for LeBron James, the Lakers star, with another milestone Saturday night.
Davis to LeBron. LeBron head down, driving to the rim, powers up, and lays it in, and there it is. LeBron James moves to number 3 on the NBA's all-time scoring list. Only Karl Malone and the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar have ever scored more points in this game than LeBron.
At 33,644 points, calling the Lakers radio network, James moving past Kobe Bryant for third all-time. Though it did come in defeat, the Sixers beat the Lakers 109-91. Ben Simmons with 28 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists. Tobias Harris, a team-high 29. The Sixers improved to 20-2 on their home floor. Rudy Gobert, 22 points, 17 rebounds, 5 blocks. Utah comes back to beat the Mavericks at home 112-107. The Jazz have won 19 of their last 21 games. They're a league-best 11-1 in the month of January and just now 3.5 games behind the Lakers in the West. Chris Paul and Dennis Schroeder combined for 51 points. Thunder get their fifth in a row. They beat the T-Wolves 113-104. Nets stop a 5-game skid. They top the Pistons in overtime 121-111. Kyrie Irving with 45 points. Bulls upend the Cavs 118-106. College hoops, the Big 12 SEC Challenge, providing some excitement Saturday, including in Lubbock, where number 15 Kentucky edged 18th-ranked Texas Tech 76-74 in overtime. John Calipari's program coming away with a good road battle.
I watched the Baylor game. They could have won, beat Baylor. Even West Virginia got them down at West Virginia. They didn't go away. They fight like heck. I expected, even if we got up, I expected them to make some kind of run.
The Jayhawks hold off Tennessee 74-68. Number 5 Florida State edging Notre Dame 85-84. Top-ranked Baylor downing Florida in Gainesville 72-61. Number 2 Gonzaga over Pacific 92-59. At the NHL All-Star Game in St. Louis last night, the Pacific edged the Atlantic 5-4. Boston's David Pastrnak winning All-Star MVP honors in defeat. Out at Torrey Pines, 3 rounds are complete of the Farmers Insurance Open. Round 4 coming up today. John Rahm in the lead at 12-under, 1 shot ahead of Ryan Palmer. Rory McIlroy is 3 back at -9. Tiger Woods trails by 5 shots at 7-under. Fourth round of the Australian Open this morning. Roger Federer needing 4 sets to advance past Martin Fucsovics. And women's top seed Ashley Barty beat Alison Risk in straight sets. This is Justin Shackle.
Follow us anytime on Twitter. Our handle is at CBS Sports Radio.
Years, 100 champions.
The Packers were crowned world champions in the gelid confines of their own arena.
A century of football is the backdrop for this NFL season.
Ring it. He's going to go all the way.
A centennial celebration of the ghosts and the goats.
Montana launches it for the end zone. Jerry Rice.
The NFL at 100. What will happen next?
Oh, my God. Tyree just goes up for it like a basketball player.
Find out every week. It's Sunday Morning Football with your host, T.A., only on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. The Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. Rocket Mortgage giving away millions during Super Bowl 54. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. So glad you're with us. Sunday Morning Football on the bye week before Super Bowl 54. We've got a great show coming up for you. How about Brian Billick joining us, head coach of the Super Bowl
35 champion Baltimore Ravens in 2000. He'll drop on by later on this hour to talk about preparation and handling the noise and the pressure of Super Week. Also, we'll go back over the history of these two teams in the Super Bowl, Niners and Chiefs, and some classic moments they've played. Remember Young versus Montana in 1994? We'll hear back some of the great moments in Chiefs and Niners history against one another. Also, trying to shut down or slow down Patrick Mahomes and Philadelphia and their view on Andy Reid in another Super Bowl. It's all straight ahead on Sunday Morning Football here on CBS Sports Radio. Glad to be with you, everybody. Damon Amendola, DA, and if you are of a certain age, this is a cool day and a cool week leading up to Super Bowl 54 because you have a week-long remembrance going down memory lane of what the Super Bowl's history is all about. In fact, as we speak, remember back in the day when ESPN used to run the Super Bowl highlight marathons? It's on right now on NFL Network. Not to tell you to do anything else besides have Sunday Morning Football locked in, but at some point today, you might just want to flip on NFL Network because right now they're on Super Bowl 36, Patriots and Rams, the 0-1 championship by the Cinderella Patriots and Tom Brady's first title over the greatest show on turf. And this is always such a fun week as the countdown begins and we get to reminisce over Super Bowls in the past and great players that have played in that game, etc. And we have a great player already in Patrick Mahomes taking on a great defense in the San Francisco 49ers. So the matchup should be a good one. Vegas has this set at a very close line. So the sharps, the odds makers believe it's going to be a great game. I do too. At least it's going to be a close game. So we've got a lot to get to this morning on the show. But earlier this week, really just on Friday, Eli Manning held his farewell press conference, a guy that built his reputation on this week. Two championships over Belichick and Brady. Does that do enough to cement his place in Canton? Well, maybe that's not the discussion we should actually be having. We begin with your Sunday gunslinger.
In football's Wild West, he shoots from the hip.
We need men like him to make towns safe for decent people.
DA is the Sunday gunslinger.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
All right, let's do it.
Eli Manning stepped away this week, retiring as a New York Giant. Drafted in 2004, 15 years, same organization. My question is, why upon the immediate retirement of Eli Manning do we already have to rip apart his legacy based on whether or not people think he should get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
It's rare to have the privilege of playing an entire career with one organization. I'm proud to be one of the few, but even more so that it was as a Giant. It was the right thing to call it a career and to end it instead of trying to uproot my family and leave and try somewhere else. This was the right decision, and I know it is, and I'm at peace with it. I think that's what has made this day a little bit easier. For most of my life, people have called me easy. Believe me, there is nothing easy about today. Wellington Mara always said, once a Giant, always a Giant. For me, it's only a Giant.
Quite the exclamation point by Eli Manning. Once a Giant, only a Giant. Pretty good line. But here's the thing. Eli Manning had a great career. Multi-time Pro Bowler, two epic playoff runs, two Super Bowl MVPs, did it in a difficult media market. Always withstood the noise, always never put himself in front of the team, never took shots at teammates, management, or the coaching staff. And yet, it's almost as though people can't wait to stick their fangs into Eli to tear it apart. And I guess it's partially because there's two very polar opposite vibes on Eli. Some that will say, hey, he's got championships, that's all that matters. He was clutch when it mattered most. Versus the people that say, well, he had all of those interceptions or had a 500 record. But I just think that looking at Eli's career through the singular prism of if he's a Hall of Famer or not really distills him down to, I think, less than what his career was. His career is about 15 years of durability, of class, of clutch moments, of two Lombardi trophies. And whether that ends up being in the Hall of Fame or not, that's for 5 years from now, or six, or 10. But for right now to trash his legacy, if you don't believe that he's a Hall of Famer, just seems misguided. And unfortunately, that's where we are, and I think the media does this. I think because there's not enough people that really watched the career or wants to think about it in nuance or really wants to analyze things, it's about an easy yes or no answer. That's all we can handle today, apparently, is yes or no answers, yes or no questions. Eli Manning's career does not come down to a yes or no question. It's not, is he a Hall of Famer, isn't he? It's about 15 years of doing things the right way and twice that process leading you to the mountaintop for a franchise that will put him in the Ring of Honor and for a fan base and a city and a market that will forever respect everything that he accomplished. Antonio Brown is going down a dark path. We all know this. So dark that this week he turned himself into authorities after yet another run-in with the law. And my question is, at what point do we have to just stop talking about whether Antonio Brown's career is ever going to happen again in the football world? That it's really just about a life. Because talking about him in a football sense right now feels to be doing him a disservice. I don't think there's any football left in Antonio Brown. We just have to hope there's not an end of a life for Antonio Brown.
I'm a firm believer, and I'm not a medical professional, that the perfect hit changed this man's life. And that would have been January of 2016. It would have been the wild card game of the 15 season. He started to be someone who was afraid everyone was out to get him. He never smiled after that all that much. He became somebody different. He used to be, sort of in a former life, innocently narcissistic, if you would. Much like many receivers in the NFL. But he didn't have this dark side to him. And for me, every single incident, whether he's driving 100 miles an hour down a suburban road, throwing furniture off a balcony in South Florida, any of this stuff, it all happened after the perfect hit. I think it's a CTE story. He may be a knucklehead to start with, but it's definitely exacerbated by playing football, I think. And again, I'm not a medical guy, but if you can't see the trajectory that took a sharp spike right after the perfect hit and has never recovered since then, that's just all fact. The timeline is the everybody's out to get me, the dark, never. I mean, the guy used to smile all the time. He almost had a Sammy Davis Jr. quotient to him. And I say that all the time on the air, where he may have not known how to answer a question, or he may have not known the right answer. You know what he would do? He would smile, and everybody would just crack up. And that was in like 13 and 14 and 15. And he hasn't smiled. And when's the last time you've seen AB happy? When's he smiled? It's been 2 or 3 years.
That's Colin Dunlap. He's the co-host of the Fan Morning Show in Pittsburgh at 93.7 The Fan. He was on with Zach Gelb here on CBS Sports Radio earlier this week, and I know a lot of people have pointed to that hit from Vontaze Burfict to the playoff game. Wouldn't that be something that the NFL would be terrified for that to come out, that Antonio Brown had a potential Hall of Fame career derailed by one hit, and that his life went completely off the rails? Now, again, that science and wellness and the medical community that may not be able to put those dots together ever, but wouldn't it be something if later on, years down the line, decades down the line, we found out that Antonio Brown's entire life was altered by one hit, and he played football after that hit, but that one hit altered everything? And earnestly and understandably, if you look at the timeline, it is true. A lot of things changed for Antonio Brown after that vicious hit from Vontaze Burfict, and now it does not appear that football will ever be in Antonio Brown's future ever again. Finally, In the Super Bowl, there's a lot of emotional highs and lows. And that roller coaster is something that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to have to try to figure out because they've already been in this a couple of times this postseason. The emotional ups and downs, falling behind 24-0 to the Houston Texans, falling behind 17-7 to the Tennessee Titans. They were able to withstand that and then come back and push forward for their breakaway victories. Can they allow that to happen again in the Super Bowl? Keeping yourself emotionally level-headed, such a key thing. I had Don Beebe, a member of all four of those Buffalo Bills teams and losing Super Bowl franchises, on the air with me earlier this week.
It's our fourth Super Bowl. We're playing the Cowboys. We're in Atlanta. The first half, we're winning at halftime, and we felt great. I mean, we were handling the line of scrimmage against the Cowboys and shutting down the run game and doing what we do well on with the no huddle. We get the ball first coming out, and I think we were up 13-10, I believe, at halftime. And we come out and we fumbled the football, I think, real early in that drive. And Leon Lett, of all people, causes the fumble. And James Washington, the safety, picks that ball up and scores a touchdown on the same play. And you come to the sideline, and you literally would have thought we were down 30. And we were down 4 points, and we had the whole half to play. Emotionally, we were done. I mean, it was because of the mounted pressure that we put on ourselves. We didn't handle the emotions of that game very well at all. Okay, we were able to do it the rest of the year, but not the Super Bowl. And then we went on the rest of that game, didn't score another touchdown, and they went on, and Emmett ran it right down our throats for 2-3 more, and we got blown out. Well, if you fast forward now 2 years, I'm with the Packers. And we go up early, I think it's 10-0. Next thing you know, we're down 14-10 to the Patriots. Drew Bledsoe threw a couple touchdowns. And at that moment, when we went down four, it was still early in the first half, I think second quarter, you go to the sideline, oh, man, it was completely different. Reggie White, Eugene Robinson, Leroy Butler, all the leaders on the team, and at that time, myself, we were just like, guys, we're fine. It's no big deal. Just keep doing what we've been doing all year. We're fine. And everybody was in a good mood, okay? And next thing you know, halftime score, I think, was 27-14, and then we went on to beat the Patriots pretty handily. We just handled the emotions of that game. So the team that handles the emotions the best in this game almost always wins this game.
Don Beebe, he was a member of four Super Bowl losers in Buffalo and then one Super Bowl winner in Green Bay. And how interesting is that? Even Beebe misremembers that play, saying that that James Washington fumble return for a touchdown to lead off the third quarter put us down by 4 points. No, the game was tied. It was only 13-13 at that point in time, but he's saying that the Bills thought of it as down 30. It felt like that, and he, in his memories, think that they were actually trailing in that game because of that. They weren't. It goes to show you, understanding there's more football to be played, understanding that you can't get over the top on any one play is so important. And remember this when it comes to the Chiefs, considering they were able to dig their way out of a 24-point and a 10-point hole in their two playoff wins this season. And remember, they came back against the Patriots last year in the AFC Championship game. Here's your phone number if you want to jump in as we talk about Super Bowl 54 and everything surrounding football in the NFL news this week. 855-212-4CBS or on Twitter. Hit me up, DA on CBS. When we come back, the Chiefs and Niners don't have a long history of games against one another. However, they do have a very memorable affair back in 1994. 25 years ago, it was Montana versus Young. We've got the highlights from that and other memorable Chiefs and Niners plays throughout the years coming up next as part of Excessive Celebration. Damon Amendolara with you here on Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio.
NFL action begins next Sunday with the NFL Today, followed by a full slate of regional games. You'll say, you saw it on CBS Sports.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
We appreciate you being with us. A week away from Super Bowl Sunday. Now our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote. Geico.com, that's easy. Coming up, Brian Billick's going to join us. He was the head coach in Super Bowl 35 of the 2000 Ravens, one of the most aggressive and historically dominant defenses ever. They swarmed the 2000 New York Giants in that game. Kerry Collins, Jim Fossil, Tiki Barber, and the like. And that 2000 Giants team stood no chance in a 34-7 thumping behind Ray Lewis and the rest of those fantastic defensive players and stars and standouts for the Ravens and Trent Dilfer, the quarterback, in 2000. So we'll talk to Brian Billick about that game and preparing for the big game coming up here in about 15 minutes from now. But around this time, each and every week, we bring you Excessive Celebration. And throughout the college football season, it's the best play-by-play calls of Saturday's college action. However, now that college football is over, we turn our attention to the NFL. And this week, after no playoff games on a Saturday, or in this case, on a Sunday, why don't we look back on the Niners and the Chiefs' history? They don't have a lot of moments that you remember, having only played, obviously, in the regular season. However, there were a few interesting moments in their clashes throughout the decades. Let's bring you your Excessive Celebration.
The soundtrack of the NFL.
It's a floater downfield, intercepted at the 35-yard line.
The radio team going berserk.
How in the world did he throw that ball down there and get that out of the touchdown?
Here's Excessive Celebration.
He is in! Touchdown!
The voice of the Chiefs these days, and has been for decades, Mitch Holthus on Chiefs Radio. Touchdown, Kansas City. And we begin last year between these two teams. They met in September of 2018 at Arrowhead Stadium, and the Chiefs, behind the early magic as a starter of Patrick Mahomes, put up 38 points on the Niners and won going away 38-27. This touchdown from Mahomes to Watkins makes it 35-7 Chiefs.
Mahomes slant, caught inside the 10-yard line to the 5. Sammy Watkins breaks tackles, touchdown! Kansas City, add another to the list for Patrick Mahomes. Sets another NFL record, a 12-yard touchdown pass. Mahomes is third of the game, 13 in 3 weeks.
We knew early that Mahomes had the goods, and we knew it early last season when he took over the starting job from Alex Smith. And so this was the start of that, the first month of the season, as he set all types of passing records for your debut and your first 3 weeks and your first 4 games. And part of that was, people forget, 38 points put up against this Niners team. Now remember, the Niners, without Jimmy Garoppolo last season because of the injury, fell to 4-12. To go from 4-12 and into the Super Bowl is an amazing turnaround. So, years before that, Joe Montana was, of course, the legend of the San Francisco 49ers and a 4-time Super Bowl champion. But he was released, let go from the Niners, and he ended up in Kansas City as a free agent and had 2 seasons as a starting quarterback in KC, 93 and 94. In 1994, Joe Montana, as the quarterback of the Niners, took on his heir apparent in San Francisco, Steve Young, at Arrowhead Stadium. And in 1994, 25 years ago, here's how it sounded on Chiefs Radio.
High formation play fake by Montana. Wants to throw wide open. Joe Valerio has a touchdown. Back to throw is Montana. Fires for the end zone. Keith Cash. Touchdown, Kansas City. Young will throw. He's being rushed. He's headed the end zone. Derek Thomas nailed Steve Young in the end zone for 2 points.
Derek Thomas, Steve Young, Joe Montana, Marcus Allen, all Hall of Famers that would play in this game. Jerry Rice as well. This one, advantage Montana. He threw for 2 touchdowns. Steve Young threw 2 interceptions. And in 1994, the Chiefs would win the Montana versus Young competition on September the 11th, 25 years ago, 24-17. However, that year, the Niners would go on to win the Super Bowl. They would thrash the Chargers in the Super Bowl in San Diego. Let's go back to 1991. This was one of the rare years that the 1980s and 1990s Niners teams of that era missed the playoffs. In 1991, this was the second to last week of the season at Candlestick Park.
Boner drops back to throw, goes to the goal line, touchdown 49ers, John Taylor. Boner throws the throw, hell alone, end zone, touchdown 49ers, Jerry Rice. Sweeps to the right, lots of room, he's to the 45, 40, down the sideline, he's gone, touchdown! touchdown, 49ers!
Joe Starkey on Niners Radio. The Niners would win that game in 1991, 28-14 at Candlestick. However, they would finish the season 10-6, and that would be a year that 10-6 was not good enough to make the postseason. So a rare year in the Montana and Young era that they did not make the playoffs in 1991. That was the year after Montana was injured in the NFC Championship game by the hit from Leonard Marshall. And then finally, let's go all the way back to 1982. They were the defending Super Bowl champions, the 49ers were, and the Chiefs were at Arrowhead Stadium against the Niners. And in this season, this was a strike-shortened season. The regular season was shortened to just 9 games, and the Niners would win this game, but also miss the postseason after being defending Super Bowl champs.
Kenny, intercepted by Ronnie Lott down the sideline. Ronnie Lott still going, and he may go all the way. Ronnie Lott, touchdown. No flags down. 78 yards for the touchdown to win it for San Francisco.
That was Dick Stockton on CBS. And how about that day? Ronnie Lott intercepting Bill Kenny, the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, a huge bust. And ultimately, the Niners would win that game, but finish the season just 3-6 after winning the Super Bowl in 1981. That was 82. They'd be back into the fray in 83 and then win the Super Bowl again in 1984, their second of their 4 championships under Montana. That is your excessive celebration, your greatest moments between the Chiefs and the Niners throughout the years. When we come back here on the show, Brian Billick is going to join us. He was the head coach of the 2000 Ravens when they won the Super Bowl behind one of the most dominant defenses ever. We'll talk to Brian Billick about it coming up here next. DA, Sunday Morning Football here on CBS Sports Radio.
You have a reservation for year-round excitement with CBS Sports. Your ticket to action.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Football, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Damon Amendolara, DA with you as we prepare next weekend for Super Bowl 54. And joining us here on the show this morning is a Super Bowl champion head coach. He was leading the Baltimore Ravens now nearly 20 years ago, amazingly, to a dominant Super Bowl season in 2000. Former head coach Brian Billick joining us this morning on the show. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you.
Appreciate you being with us. And, you know, earlier in the week, we had Khadri Ismail, one of your former players, on. And I asked him about the preparation for the Super Bowl and how you guys approached Super Bowl week. And he said, you know, the best part about it was coach didn't give us curfews. He knew the temperament of this team. We hadn't done that throughout the year. We needed to stay consistent. That really helped us. What was your thinking as a coach going into Super Bowl week and the personality of your team and how to handle that?
Well, as Khadri said, all year long, we had curfew. We just didn't have bed check. And the curfew was only the night before the game, because that is consistent when you're going the entire season, except for the night before the game. It's not like you have a curfew or you're checking on them at home. I had a mature team and understood. I didn't want to change for the Super Bowl as opposed to what we had done all year long, because basically that sends a signal that says, oh, okay, well, I trusted you now, then I don't trust you now. And you wanted to keep that consistency and give them ownership of, look, this is how we got here, this is how we conducted ourselves, and we're going to do the same down in Tampa.
I had an interesting conversation with Don Beebe, who played on 4 Super Bowl losers with the Bills and then won one in 96. And he said, emotionally, not making the moment too big was crucial. He said by the end of those Bills losses, he felt like everything that went against them felt like it was the end of the world, versus with the Packers, he said, we were light, we were loose, we were playing our thing. With the Ravens in 2000, it felt like you guys were really loose. How did you make sure that team acted like that on a huge stage like Super Sunday?
Well, I let my veterans take the lead, that they knew what it was to be down there. How rare that was, with the exception of Shannon Sharp, we hadn't had anybody, and Rod Woodson, we hadn't had anybody that had been through that Super Bowl. So we kind of, you know, tried to take the lead for them, again, right along with the curfew thing. This is, you know, once you get to Wednesday, of Super Bowl week, you want things to feel as normal as possible, beginning with practice. That the practice is the one place where, yes, you know how to do this. You've done this before. Then Thursday, then Friday. Obviously, Saturday and Sunday are a little bit different, but you try to normalize that to get them to understand, look, at the end of the day, obviously the results and the consequences are far more dramatic. But at the end of the day, when we kick off on Sunday at 6 p.m., it's like every other game you've played. Just go do your job. So you try to reach that normalcy. In the case of the Bills, you can certainly understand because of their history, particularly during the game, they're trying to relax, but they get to the game, and when that bad things happen, all the bad things that happened in the previous game come rushing back in, even though you've tried to hold them off at arm's length going into the game.
Brian Billick is our guest this morning here on CBS Sports Radio on Sunday Morning Football. To that end, do you think Andy Reid's losses in big spots and having never won a Super Bowl, do you think that will at all hang over the Chiefs if something goes wrong next Sunday?
I don't, because that's not his team. In other words, Andy's been at this a long time, been 15 years since he's back in the Super Bowl. I don't think he's focused on it, but everybody's talking about it. It's been a while since you've been here. This may be your last best chance. All those types of things. Well, this team wasn't a part of that. That's unique to Andy. So they're not going to internalize it. All they know is they got to the championship game last year. They came up a little bit short. Now they're in the Super Bowl. And so I don't know that emotion is going to come crashing down on them, because it's not something they were a part of.
You had a historically great defense that just bulldozed everybody in its way. And in this matchup, you have a great offense with Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs against a great defense, and specifically front seven in San Francisco. When it's a great offense versus a great defense in a spot like this, do you say advantage great defense?
Well, typically you might, but this offense is pretty spectacular. I mean, they've just got so many weapons, so many different ways to hurt you. You know, you can double Kelsey, you can double Hill, but then you got to match up with Hardman and Robinson and Watkins, and not the least of which, then, if you get too focused on that, you got Damian Williams and certainly Patrick Mahomes that can pull it down and run the ball. But I did a bit for Playbook on the network to where this reminds me, and so you'd say, okay, yes, in this instance is probably the offense because it's so dynamic. But it reminded me of the 2007 Super Bowl 42, where New England came in and was the number one offense, and had obviously, and at the time was the highest scoring offense in the history of the league. They were number one in scoring, total offense, third down, explosive plays, prohibitive favorites against the New York Giants, who were a defense-dominated team with a phenomenal front four. And what did they do? New York went in and held them under to 300 yards, only two touchdowns. Tom Brady got sacked five times. So certainly San Francisco is capable of that defensively. The key is, can they keep up as they had with the running game, chewing clock down, running the ball, and keeping the ball out of the hands of that Kansas City offense?
Brian Billick, former Super Bowl championship head coach, well, always a Super Bowl championship head coach, NFL Network analyst as well, joining us here on the show. If you were to design a defensive scheme to try to at least slow down some of the effectiveness of what Patrick Mahomes can do, how do you start? Where do you start?
Well, you got to change it up. It begins with that four-man rush. They got five first-round draft choices in that defensive line, the San Francisco. So they can rotate through some pretty good guys and get a pretty good rush with a four-man rush. So what does that do? That allows you on the back end to change up and do some things. It's hard to play zone against this Kansas City team, but you got to try. But it can't be just three deep, just two deep. You got to rotate it up. You got to get Patrick Mahomes to pause for just a second to see, what am I facing? And now maybe that four-man rush can get home. And then when you do want to man up and you double the appropriate people, again, can you get home with the four? Maybe bring the one extra guy to change the clock for Patrick Mahomes so he doesn't have time to find and isolate that one-on-one matchup.
How was butterflies for you, excitement for you, nerves for you the night before the Super Bowl? As a coach, is it different from the players, or is it the same type of nerves and butterflies?
I imagine it's the same. It wasn't so much the night before, because you have so long on from Friday when you're done with practice until kickoff is a long, long time. And Saturday is a long day.
Yeah.
Sunday leading. Now, you've done this before. You've all played night games. So you've gone through this before. But because of everything that goes with it, that is a long time. And that's when that anxiousness shows up. Not necessarily the night before, but that all day Saturday when you have to mull over in your mind what's about to happen. Sitting all morning on Sunday waiting to get into that routine. It's a long 2 days.
How'd you kill that Saturday? How'd you kill time?
Well, you don't want to wear the players out. You don't want to leave them too much to their own devices in terms of thinking too much and all that. So you try to create a little normalcy. You have some meetings. You have a walkthrough. You don't want to wear them out. You have to be very careful because the coaches are capable of doing that. My coaches wanted to have extended meetings and basically reinstall the game plan. I said, no, we're not doing that. Okay. We will give them programmable times to come together and get up and move around, whether it's breakfast and then come back later, maybe for a walkthrough, then maybe do a little meeting, then get back into your normal Saturday night routine. And then Sunday, you try to keep on a normal, late routine when you're playing a night game. Same way, maybe an additional meeting just to get them up and moving around and keep them focused on the game. Really, basically, give them something to fill their time that's a little more productive than then just sitting in their room wondering how well they're going to play.
Excellent insight. Brian Billick joining us this morning on the show. Also, NFL Network analyst joining us here on CBS Sports Radio. Coach, this was a lot of fun. Thanks so much. Enjoy the big game.
All righty.
Brian Billick joining us this morning here on the show on CBS Sports Radio on Sunday Morning Football. And for Brian Billick, one of the most dominant defenses in Super Bowl history, led by an offensive-minded guy. I mean, remember that Billick really cut his teeth and became a would-be head coach based on the 98 Vikings, one of the most explosive offenses ever. That was Randall Cunningham, as well as Chris Carter and Randy Moss. And then there was Brian Billick overseeing one of the most dominant defenses ever. Marvin Lewis, his defensive coordinator, ultimately getting the head coaching job in Cincinnati because of that season. But the dominance of that defense was absolutely the signature of the 2000 Ravens and was the first championship in Ravens history after the move from Cleveland as the Browns. This weekend, this upcoming weekend, it'll be Super Bowl 54, of course, in Miami. And this will be the 11th Super Bowl that Miami has hosted. In the first 10, I went back and I ranked 1 through 10 of the Super Bowls in Miami. And there have been some absolute classic. I began at number 10, and that was Super Bowl 5, the Blunder Bowl. This was Colts and Cowboys back in 1970. And this was the Colts trying to rebound after the embarrassment, the shame of Super Bowl III and the loss to Joe Namath and the Jets as 18-point favorites. Ultimately, the Baltimore Colts did win the Super Bowl, but it was 11 turnovers on the day, best known as the Super Bowl or the Blunder Bowl. That is the worst Super Bowl in Miami's hosting history. Number 9, John Elway's finale. Following the 1998 season, Elway was coming off his first championship ever in that upset over the Packers in 1997, but it was a blowout. Remember the Dirty Birds and Eugene Robinson getting into trouble, soliciting a prostitute the night before the Super Bowl. Elway and the passing attack all over the Atlanta Falcons. It was an easy blowout win. The Broncos built a 31-6 lead and ultimately won 34-19. Number 8, your greatest Miami Super Bowl, Peyton Manning's first title. Remember, by 2006, Peyton Manning had become a bit of a cautionary tale. He was the face of the NFL. He was one of the most highly touted quarterback prospects ever. And yet, in his first 8 years, unable to win, first 7 years, unable to win a Super Bowl, really unable to win many playoff games as well, always ran into a wall. But in 2006, he finally got all the way through, came back from a 21-3 deficit over the Patriots, slaying that dragon. And in the Super Bowl, didn't have to do much to out-duel Rex Grossman. Peyton Manning had 247 yards, only one touchdown, but it was enough to beat the Bears 29-17. Number 7, remember 25 years ago, Steve Young's championship. That was in Miami, when the San Francisco 49ers were big favorites over the Cinderella Chargers.
He set numerous records that day. Steve Young passed for 325 yards and 6 touchdowns in a demolition of the Chargers. And that was that famous NFL Films moment where he asks his teammates to pull the monkey off of his back on the sideline. He finally had that championship. My number 6 greatest Super Bowl in Miami was Super Bowl II when the Packers, that was Vince Lombardi's final game as the Packers head coach, beat the Oakland Raiders. They had beaten the Chiefs in Super Bowl I, then took on the Raiders in Super Bowl II. If you look at those two rosters, the Lombardi Packers were coming to an end. They were only 9-4-1 that season, so not a really dominant, thoroughly dominant season. However, between the Packers and the Raiders, there were 14 Hall of Famers. Sorry, 9 Hall of Famers playing that day, and then combine that with Lombardi on the sidelines, Al Davis as the Raiders owner, John Madden as the linebackers coach for the Raiders. There were 17 guys involved that game in Canton competing for Super Bowl II. Number 5 would be the onside kick. You might remember the Saints and the Colts. That was Drew Brees and Sean Payton's Super Bowl championship in a gutsy play, gutsy decision leading off the second half by Sean Payton going the onside kick. That seized the momentum for the Saints. My number 4 greatest Miami Super Bowl would be Super Bowl 10. Lynn Swann's MVP, the kangaroo catch and the levitating leap, a classic. 21-17, the Steelers outlasting the Cowboys at that time, considered the greatest Super Bowl in history. A couple of years later, they did it again. That would be my number 3, Super Bowl 13, another classic matchup after the 78 season, and that was a tremendous game between the Steelers and Cowboys yet again, as the Steelers survived 35-24 late in that game. 35-31, rather, would be your final score. Your second greatest Super Bowl in Miami history, Montana's moment. The John Candy game. Montana going down the field and hitting John Taylor in the waning seconds to beat the Bengals. And the number 1 greatest Super Bowl in Miami history, Super Bowl III. Joe Namath's guarantee. When we come back here on the show, let's talk about the Niners defense and if they have the chance to slow down Patrick Mahomes. Should Eagles fans still be bitter that Andy Reid never won them a Super Bowl when he was in Philadelphia? We'll discuss coming up here next. It's Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.